You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 468. I think the most important technique is to ground everything, to make a fantasy world grounded and relatable. Just great characters. Timur Bekmambetov.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari.
Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success.
The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's film, B-I-Z, book.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Well, guys, you're in for a treat today. We have arguably one of the best action directors of his generation, in my humble opinion. We have Timur Bekmambetov, and he is the creator behind such amazingly visual films like Night Watch, Day Watch, Wanted, and Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. Now, for those of you who have not seen a film like Wanted that starred Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman, it was kind of like an explosion going off in Hollywood when it came out. People at that point said, all action films need to look like this. This is the future of action films. So many other filmmakers have been inspired by Timur's style. I mean, this is very similar to what happened when Tony Scott came out in the 80s with Top Gun. Michael Bay came out with Bad Boys and The Rock. It just changes the visual language. Prior to that, action films didn't look the way they did with those great visual artists. But Timur also moved everything forward a little bit with his films. And now Timur is actually taking the whole filmmaking process to another level. He has created a new film language called Screen Life. And a Screen Life film basically takes place completely on a computer screen, on an iPhone, on an iPad, meaning that the entire story is told by videos and text and emails and website looks, searches. Everything is being done all on a screen, which is very similar to what happens to us in life. Our new lives, the way, you know, we spend so much time on screens on a daily basis, this just makes sense. It's another evolution of the storytelling process. And his new film Profile is remarkable and honestly very eerie. When I watched it, I was watching it on my computer and I felt like I was kind of like eavesdropping or being very voyeuristic on someone else's, you know, conversations and screen. It kind of took me a little bit to get used to that. But by the end of the movie, I'm like rooting for her, like, don't go in there. Be careful. He's right by the door. It was really an amazing storytelling technique. And he has a website. He's got technology he's built to help filmmakers create Screen Life films. He just got a 5-picture deal with Universal Studios to release exclusively Screen Life films. His first film he produced, called Unfriend, made, I think on a $1 million budget, made $65 million worldwide. And it's pretty cool to see a brand new film language being developed by a visionary filmmaker. And I'm really excited to share this episode with you. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Timur Bekmambetov. I'd like to welcome to the show Timur Bekmambetov.
Great.
Ah, I've been practicing for hours. Timur, how are you doing, my friend? Thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm thank you very much. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I've been a fan of yours since Night Watch. I remember when Night Watch came out, and my mind exploded. I could not believe what I was watching, and I became obsessed with you and your work and your style and all that stuff, which we're going to get into all of that in a minute. But first, how did you get started in the film business?
I was production designer, mm-hmm. stage designer in the theater, production designer. Then I couldn't find the right director to work with, and I decided to direct myself. Then I couldn't find the right producer to help me to produce the movies, and I became a producer. It's just like 5 years ago, I producing Screen Life movies. I couldn't find the right tools to make Screen Life movies because a different type of filmmaking, mm-hmm. no cameras. And then I became an IT whatever inventor. Inventing new technology for new language.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and we'll talk about that in your new film, Profile, which uses that kind of screen. Is it called Screen Life?
Screen Life, yeah.
Screen Life. So that whole new, it's a genre of filmmaking right now, which is basically a film that takes place on a screen completely. The whole thing takes place like if you're on a computer screen. And it's a new, brand new narrative story technique. It's just a really interesting way.
Yeah, and I would like to correct you.
Yes, please.
Because it's not a genre; mm-hmm. it's a language. Because
there you go.
You can use this language to tell stories of any genre. Yeah, you know, because we produced horror movies like Unfriended, mm-hmm. Detective stories like Searching, and we produced Romeo and Juliet the last year. It's a classical. Tragedy, and now we are finishing a disaster sci-fi movie about alien invasion, and it's with Ice Cube and Eva Longoria, and many other type of movies like musicals and comedies, and it's all Screen Life because just new language.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Thank you for the correction because you're right. Because now as you were saying that, I'm like, ooh, an alien invasion like that. Ooh, that would be kind of interesting. It was kind of like when you saw Signs, M. Night Shyamalan's Signs. It all took place inside basically an alien invasion, but all you saw was television glimpses.
Yes.
And it was all happening in that farmhouse, which kind of like, okay, it's all happening on your screen and a giant alien invasion might be happening, which will be I can't wait to see that one. That'll be very interesting. But
the difference is that the Screen Life is quite different because before it was just different ways to tell stories about physical space where mm-hmm. we live. Mm-hmm. But because now we live in two spaces at the same time, in physical and digital, and in digital world, in digital space. We spend so much time and so many important events of our life happening in digital space
right.
that this becomes a only way to understand who we are and where we go and what we're looking for. And it's why Screen Life is a very, very contemporary and necessary.
Yeah, it's really interesting as well because you're absolutely right. Like, you know, when my children were born, the grandparents weren't in the room. They were being FaceTimed, you know, or we're off on vacation somewhere. If they can't be with us, we could show them or the kids, you know, they are seeing during this quarantine, for God's sakes. I mean, our, you know, the grandparents have been seeing the kids grow up this last year all through FaceTime, or through Skype or through something along those lines. And it is, you're absolutely right. Most of our life is on screens at this point. Like a lot of our time is spent on screen and important moments. It's not just Facebook but that's yes. part of it, but all those other things. You're absolutely right.
Yes. It's, my wedding, anniversary was in Zoom, and my and our interview is in Zoom too, by the way,
right?
In Skype, sorry.
Yes.
And I don't know, and the robbing banks, like for example, robbing banks today, it's not about masks and guns, because there is nothing to get. It's right. all about like a cracking code and stealing data. And even, by the way, the aliens showed up not to get some oil, whatever, or blood, to get information. Because data is more important than – is a data is a value.
Oh, massive value, massive – the right amount of the right kind of data is worth billions if not trillions of dollars if it's – Yes. If it's the right kind of data. So we are in a weird world, and I've been going down deep the rabbit hole of cryptocurrencies and NFTs and blockchain and all of that information.
AI
as well. Our world is changing so rapidly. And I feel like, go ahead.
Do you know the story? A friend of mine, the banker, and he said that their data allowed them to tell that the woman is pregnant before she got the test. because big data helps them to compare different activities, and the woman, she doesn't know yet, but banks already has this information.
That is terrifying. That is it is 1984. It's 1984.
Yeah, it's why profile is thrilling, because it is about the technology. It's mm-hmm. not about ISIS. It's not about terrorists. It's about the technology and how we live in this new world mm-hmm. where we have no idea who we are, where's my space, where's your space, mm-hmm. what's good, what's evil. Okay, it's just totally different, reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to ask you, when you came out with Night Watch, which I have to ask you, how the hell did you make Night Watch for such a little amount of money? Because it's such a big budget looking film. It looks like $100 million, $150 million, well, today's money, back in 2004's money, or when I think it was around that time when it was released.
Yeah.
It would have been maybe an $80 million movie at that point, but I know it didn't cost that much.
Yeah, it's all about ideas. The ideas, the fresh ideas, and about the creativity and freedom, mm-hmm. because when you don't need to approve things with the 50 partners and investors, then you can make everything reasonable, with cost effective, and you can enjoy the process. Because the many, many movies were destroyed because of the very difficult process of the producing. You know, because if it costs hundreds of million dollars, then you have 100 people scared
to lose their jobs and lose their jobs
and lose money and jobs. Yeah, and this creates the atmosphere of the fear and no responsibility and the screen life kind of a way out, because when the movie called like Night Watch was like $2 million or something, I don't know, remember how much, it gave us a freedom to be crazy, to be creative, to be to express yourself, and it's why screen life is a future, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a language. Every filmmaker can make a movie with the cost of the like, you know, writing book. Whatever. It's the same.
Right.
You need a pen and paper to write the book. This, you need a laptop and your talent.
Now, with Night Watch, you know, when Night Watch came out, I saw it early on, and the visuals of it were so impactful. I mean, they were just some, like, stuff I've really never seen before. And I've been a cinephile most of my life, worked in video stores, and I've seen, studied all the greats. But your style was so unique, you know, and then obviously when you did Wanted and Daywatch, that kind of, you know, when Wanted show up, and we'll talk about Wanted in a minute, but it was just so visceral, the visual style of it. Who were your influences, and how did you kind of come up with this language? Because it's a language. It is so specifically you. Like, after you, there was a lot of copycats that tried to do what you do. But people like you and Zack Snyder and even Michael Bay, Tony Scott, they have very specific kinds of language. Yours is very specific. How did you come up with it?
I told you I was a production designer with the background being an artist, being developing the new visual languages. And also I like to experiment. I like to put things not upside down, but like they just to put things right way, because we live in a world of stereotypes because of the culture means stereotypes means like rules. And sometimes you need to step back and just be little, crazy, little childish, little naive, little unresponsible, you know, just to flip things, you know, just to feel something, you know, because it's what I do. I'm my way to create the chaos and then to try to organize, you know, you need to destroy things. You need to challenge everything, the story, the aesthetics, the rules of the genre, and then when you messing it, then somehow it gives you the energy, and then you need to organize. And when you're organizing it, trying to tell the story, then it will be your way. It will be your story, and not somebody else's story. And also it's based on my. I grew up in the. In the country with very talented filmmakers like Eisenstein or like a Kuleshov created the editing system, and Eisenstein the poetry of cinema, like, and then we had I watched a lot of art movies from the 70s and 60s, 70s, 80s from European filmmakers like Fellini, Antonioni, and because I don't know why it was so popular in the Soviet Union. All these art movies from Italy and France, and then I was a disciple of Roger Corman. This is probably the easiest.
That's amazing.
Who am I? Because I made a first movie with him.
You worked with Roger? Really? I didn't know you worked with Roger at the beginning.
Yes, friend of mine, my mentor, love him. He's a real filmmaker. He loved movies itself. And I think maybe it's an answer. Maybe the movie I made, like Wanted, it is a Roger Corman movie.
B movie made with a little bit of a higher budget.
Yeah, with a little higher budget. Night Watch is also.
Yeah.
I made a movie for him, with him, spent a lot of time with him. He was in Russia, and we spent days talking about his backstory, and he gave me a lot. He has a childish, he's in love with the cinema itself, you know, like. Not specifically, he's very, very educated. Very, he has a very good taste, but at the same time, he has a sense of humor and lightness. You know, allowing his movies to be audience friendly, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it's what I think. This is what I who am I? I think it came from. It's a mix between Fellini and Roger Corman. but it's not funny. It's not funny because I think he was official distributor of Fellini movies in the United States.
Yes, he was.
He has rights for all art movies, European art movies.
Yeah, people think of Corman only as these kind of schlocky, you know, like straight B movies that he would pump out like and never lose a dime on. But he's a very, very educated man and a very smart film producer. He's probably one of the most legendary film producers of all time. And he gave so many filmmakers their start, from Coppola to Scorsese to Ron Howard to Jack Nicholson and the list, James Cameron. I mean, it just goes on and on. So, yeah, but I've never connected the two, Fellini and Corman, in the same conversation. And if I would have, that was not the answer I was looking for. That's not the answer I expected. And I was like, wow, that's a great answer to that, because Roger's amazing. He's a remarkable producer.
You know, a friend of mine, here is a film festival in Russia a few weeks ago. It's a sci-fi film festival, a new one. And I called him and I said, Roger, can you help people and be like in jury and like a? And he said, yeah, yeah. And he recorded this speech. And he said, unfortunately, I cannot come because of the COVID. But he recorded the speech and he was in jury. He gave his advices, and that's unbelievable. He's a man who has a freedom. You know, he's not scared, you know?
Oh, no. Scared is not a word that I would imagine with Roger Corman. That for sure. That's not one of the words that I would associate with him at all. He's a legend. Legend is definitely a word I would. Now, when you go into pre-production on a film, do you storyboard or do you do previs or do a combo of both? Because it's very intense, the visuals.
I do previs. Okay. And I love previs because it's the only way to present my ideas to the like a producer studio people. Cool, because sometimes, like for example, Unwanted, I came with an idea that the rats, the James McAvoy should feed rats with explosive materials to put the electronic like wires. And send them to exploit the factory of a fraternity of Morgan Freeman's team. And the studio people were like looking at me like rats with explosive materials. What are you talking about? And, you know, sometimes I like new ideas, very difficult to explain. Mm-hmm. It's why previs helps to filmmakers to explain what they think, because storyboards is not enough.
Now, when Wanted hit Florida, I mean hit Hollywood. Excuse me. When I was in Florida, that's why I said that. But when Wanted hit Hollywood, it was like a bomb going off. I remember people around town in LA and everyone talking about Wanted, like this is the new way action films need to be made. And it was very revolutionary. I mean, the last time something like that might have happened is maybe Top Gun when Tony Scott showed up, or when when The Rock showed up, or Bad Boy showed up with Michael Bay. There was a new visual language that was created by these artists. And when you showed up, everyone was like, oh God, this is the future of action movies. They all have to look like this. Of course, that's what Hollywood would say. But what was it like? Because I have to imagine that, I mean, you were the belle of the ball. You were the very pretty girl that everybody wanted to dance with and date. So what was it like being in the center of that kind of hurricane that was Wanted when it hit? I mean, I'm sure everybody wanted to talk to you. I'm sure you were taking meetings everywhere. What was that like?
I didn't know what. I don't remember, honestly.
I lost you. Oh, there you are. Go ahead. You again.
Just 1 second. Just 1 second. Yes, do you see me?
Okay.
Yeah. It was a time, because I have two lives at the same time, because I have a Russian my Russian team and the Russian projects, and I have projects in the United States. And by the way, I shot two movies at the same time, secretly, in Prague. Wanted and the Russian Irony of Fate, another Russian Christmas comedy, romantic comedy. And it was done at the same time and released almost at the same time. And it is very different.
Yes.
I don't know. It helped me because I was not scared that I will lose something. Mm-hmm. And the Russian backlot helped me to feel independent and experiment with the different forms. In myself. I don't know.
Yeah. And when you were working also on Wanted, I mean, was that the first time you really had like giant megastars? I mean, you had Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman. Was that intimidating at all? Or had you worked with other big actors like that before?
It was fun. I mean, it was fun. It was challenging because of probably the language was an issue. Especially with James, because he had a Scottish accent, and it's very difficult for me to understand. And but it was fun because they all professionals, they all looking for all perfectionists, especially Angelina. She's just absolutely focused how to make things the best, and it's challenging. Of course, it's not easy. Because she wants to surprise people. She wants to do something nobody done before, especially this famous shot, famous for me, when she kills herself.
Aye.
Wanted.
Oh, it's a great shot.
And because she just said, okay, I will be in the movie, but I want to kill myself at the end. And the studio said, okay, this probably it will never happen because we cannot like put the gun in her mouth. Nobody will watch this movie. And I spent like a few days trying to figure out how to find a way how she can kill herself cool way, like somehow logically for the story. Mm-hmm. But cool. And then this was an idea. I just came up with an idea that she will bend the bullets will kill 19 people and kill herself at the same time. And then I sent her this storyboard and she said, yes. And this is a perfect example. The stars provokes you to surprise, to
push.
Find something.
Yes.
Yeah, to push. Yeah, they. You cannot just do something mediocre, and it's very, very important.
And so, yeah, when you're when you're working with certain level of actors, and I've had the pleasure of working with really high caliber Oscar nominated actors in my career, when you walk into the room, everyone knows it, and then they're always. You've got to lift your level up to them, and they're going to push you and challenge you because they just have so much more experience than you do a lot of times. That, I mean, a Morgan Freeman and an Angelina who, like, she's been on a set pretty much her entire life. Like, she's going to have ideas, and she's going to push you and challenge you. But I was wondering, like,
I never had a problem of learning something.
Right.
I mean, if people give these ideas, it's good for me, and I'm happy to hear. Mm-hmm. At the end of the days, of course, there is a political process how to keep things organized, you know. but because I made a lot of commercials in my life,
right. Yeah.
Hundreds of commercials, I remember how to play this political game with a lot of people having voice, but I was happy that because I had a Chris Pratt and Unwanted and Angelina,
right.
And Morgan Freeman, Chris Pratt was a fat boy.
not the action star that he is today.
Yeah. And I had a great team, and just everyone had an ideas, and I was lucky because it's great. They were all for me. But the tone, what was important for me to keep the tone and the style of the movies I like.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And then they just helped me to do it, and it was exciting.
Now, I started in commercials as well, so I know what you're talking about, of handling the client and the production company, and the
agency,
and all of that stuff. That is really great training ground for working.
Yes,
and it really is, because it's a whole other level of politics. I feel it's a bit more political than, because you're serving multiple masters. On a commercial set as opposed to a Hollywood set, which you are multiple masters, but different.
Do you know what? I had my own interpretation of not serving masters, entertaining people. For me, when I made commercials, all these people, the clients and agency, and they are audience. It's your audience. And you need to entertain them. They must be surprised and confident and surprised at the same time. It's exactly the same process. You need just to create something which will, James McAvoy or Julian Jolie or Morgan Freeman will say, wow, it's cool, let's try. You need to create ideas, entertaining, you know, and producer. They should. And I really like when you have a good producer like Mark Plott, I work with, I really like to do something to entertain. You know, just to make them feel wow. It's like a little scared, because it's new, something new, but a good producer, they feel the audience and they can understand.
You, as a filmmaker, you should feel a little bit of fear when you're out there. You should feel like you're a little bit on the line, and you might have a safety net, you might not. But when you're on the edge like that, that's where really fun stuff. Because when I do stuff, I try to push myself and get scared. I'm like, I've never done that before. Let's just jump in and see what happens. As opposed to like, okay, here we go again. We're going to do the same thing I've done 1,000 times. I imagine are constantly pushing yourself, like shooting Wanted and a romantic comedy at the same time on two different continents.
Two different stages. Yes. Two different sound stages in Prague, yeah. and also because I never had a dream to work in Hollywood. I mean, it was not my, like, even plan. It just happened itself. Like,
how? How did it happen?
I made Roger Corman movie for fun, because it was like $300,000 budget or something in Russia. Right. And then, like, very funny, with the two playmate girls.
Right, of course.
He sent two playmate girls to play women gladiators in ancient Rome. And then I made a night. Then I was trained well to make Night Watch.
Right.
And we made a Night Watch for fun with little money, and it was like a few millions. But then suddenly I made commercials where the commercials were very popular in Russia, and I was kind of infected by this interesting feeling when you do something and the next day on the street people –
The viralness of it, yeah.
Viralness, yes. And it gives you it's like a drug, you know, you cannot live without it. and then Roger Corman, and then Night Watch, I just played, like, it was crazy, playing with my subconscious, like, ideas and my aesthetical preferences, whatever. And then suddenly it became a hit. And then next morning, I think, after the release, after the weekend, the next like Monday, who called me? Harvey Weinstein called me and said,
"Hey, how you doing?
My boys already on the way to Moscow to sign the deal with you. You will be in my next movie," something like that. And I said, no, we are coming in Los Angeles. And then we had a long process of picking the partner, and finally it was Jim Giannopoulos and Fox, not Harvey.
Good move.
And what?
Good move at this point. Good move.
Yes, I never had a problem. Problems with him. We made a few movies. It was Apollo 18. We made in horror movie, and then with the last one was with the Cumberbatch and the Current War.
Oh yeah, the Current War. That was great. I love that. Yeah.
I'm mentioning it. I never had a dream to be a Hollywood director or producer. I just happened, and it was lucky, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, you kind of. But listen, lucky, yes. But you also, it's not like someone you were just doing nothing, and someone knocked on your door. Hey, do you want a Hollywood deal? You were doing stuff, and you made enough noise in Russia where people were like, "Hey, wait a minute, we want to do business with Timur. We want to get into it." So yeah, there was that, but it wasn't like your goal, like I need to get to Hollywood.
No,
it just happened to show up, but you were ready though. It wasn't like you were just hanging out and they're like, "Oh, let's give this kid a shot." You were a very established filmmaker at that point in the game.
I did what I loved. Like I did the things I love, and I never worked for hire, and,
right. You weren't a paycheck director. You're going to do the work that you want to do. And that's exactly what you've done, which brings me to the next question I have to ask you. Abraham Vampire Killer. How did this come into play? How does this even, like, when I heard it, I was like, this is ridiculous. And then I go, Timur's. Oh, well then let's take a look.
Seth Graham Smith. He wrote this book and I was probably had a reputation of like a crazy person who can do crazy stuff, and they asked me to direct this, it was fun, and I unfortunately the Lincoln is too important for American people, and it was very difficult for me to find the right
tone
because, and I was jumping from seriousness to
insanity
to jiu-jitsu, whatever. it was quite an experiment for me. Can we mix two things, like a legend, like the basement of the whole
American philosophy. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And the Roger Gorman. Can you how to mix this? And we tried.
It's still a good movie. It's still a fun movie. I think it did well overall, right? It did financially well overall.
It did some
business, no question. But it's like you're essentially, for Americans, Abraham Lincoln is like Jesus. He has a very kind of prophet, messiah kind of energy. He's almost a mythical. He's mythical.
Yes, and honestly, during the process, it changed me because I started just playing with the image, and then little by little, his whole story, his life and what he'd done, and suddenly I understood it by making movie, you know. It's not preloaded.
I was raised like that. I was raised here. I was born here, so I know Abraham Lincoln. I've been taught that since I was a child. For you, you just heard of the image, and then slowly you learn to respect him and respect his journey, and you're like, okay, how are we going to do this with the vampires now?
He had very difficult choices in his life. He had took responsibility and uh, and And it's in paid for his choices.
Right. And then, of course, the vampire hunting was another thing.
By the way, I think the okay. This is a different conversation because I think, let's move on.
No problem. Let's talk about your new film Profile, and I've had the pleasure of watching Profile. And can you tell the audience a little bit about what Profile is about?
The Profile, it's about our digital life. It's about all our fears. Exploring the new world we live now. It's not about ISIS. It's not about even the it's a thriller about our life in digital forms. You know, like we spent more than half of our life today, half our day today, in playing with a screen. You know, mm-hmm. like interacting with the screen, like now, and we all feel like a deep feeling, like we feel fear that we don't understand this world. It's like every day. It's like you know, all great horror movies, they are usually in like a part, like in very casual,
right? Suburbia, USA, like,
And it's the same effect with the screen light, with the profile. We understand all the clicks and zooms and swipes and but we don't really understand what is behind it. You know, we don't understand why people are dead, but the account's still active. Mm-hmm. And you can get suddenly a message from your friend who died a year ago saying happy birthday, because he just pushed the button, send you messages every year. And it's me, the border between life and death doesn't exist in digital world. You don't know who controls your data. Like, you don't know who can call you. You're not protected. You know, like, we know there are walls, our door closed. There is a street. There is a, like, your house, and you have a gun to protect your house. But in internet, you don't have it. And suddenly you can understand that, for example, the fear of sending wrong message to the wrong person.
You text the wrong person or email the wrong person, something that was not supposed for them.
Sometimes it's very, very tragic, you know, because so many families fell apart. So many people because just you push the button. And we know this world. We think we know this world. It's very real, very ordinary. But we understand that we don't have trust. We don't have trust how to live in this world. You know, we don't know what's good, what's evil in this world. Like, because cyberbullying, hating, and security. You know, mm-hmm. like safety. It doesn't exist. You know, it's. Do you know why? Because you can write any rules and publish it, and government can try to control it, but it doesn't work until filmmakers or writers will write stories, emotional stories about our behavior in this world. And you, by watching these stories, when you cry or you laugh, like a smiling, or you like a scared, until you will process this emotionally, you don't understand what's good, what's evil. Right. We don't have 10 commandments about digital world. We don't know what's the 7 deadly sins. Like, what does it mean for digital world? For example, one of the deadly sins, it's you're eating too much. Yeah, like you are
gluttony.
And in digital world, it's we are consuming so much data, so much information that it's destroying us.
It's toxic.
Because we don't have. Yeah, we don't. It's toxic. And for example, people chasing want to be popular, get more likes or whatever. This is also the one of the deadly sins. You know, screen life. It's a language. First time helping us to adapt digital space for us, for human beings, to somehow to understand, to reflect, to express yourself, to understand how to live in this new reality. We especially after the COVID, we were all there.
Now, because in the movie you were shooting some stuff, like obviously there's footage. So there's like footage in the hotel rooms and footage out in Syria and all that. How did you shoot that? Like, did you literally give it to people to walk around with their phones?
No. It was first time. It was we shot it in real. She was in Emmy. She was in a small house in Cockney in East London, and Bilal, the character, he was in the Middle East. I sent actor to like 3,000 miles away, and they really connected, and this whole scene happened when he was playing soccer on the dusty street in Cyprus.
So that was all real.
It was real conversations, real Skype conversations between people in different parts of the world, and it was important because I understood that the digital connections, Skypes, creating some kind of interesting bugs, like delays, or like for example, when we talk online, we're a little louder, you know, because we don't feel each other. We're trying to force to break this wall and just to connect. And it was very important for me to recreate this real environment of online communication, and it's really visible. And also, what was new in this, we didn't have the cameras. Yeah, we shot everything by recording the screens, and we invented the method when we gave actors real screens where they can really call each other, and we recorded the screens. And we gave them the chance to play almost like a theater.
And how long did it take to shoot this?
Like 10 days. because we shot 15 pages per day, 15 minutes per day.
That's insane. That's amazing. No, after watching it, I was telling you earlier, it was eerie. I felt like I was watching someone else's screen, like I was voyeuristic. Yes. But I was watching it also on my computer, so it was even weirder for me. So I wasn't watching it on a television screen. So it was a very unsettling. And at the beginning, for me, I hadn't seen a movie like this before. So at the first, I'm like, how am I getting into this? But by towards the end, I'm just like, get out of there. Get out. Like, you're completely sucked in. So it's remarkable. But listen, Tamar, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people watch this?
When and where? I hope it'll be in a week.
In a week.
Years.
Okay.
I really, really hope that Screen Live will get the audience attention, and this new language, very, very. You know, every film festival where we send this movie, we got exactly the same prize. You know,
which is
audience award. the professionals never gave us a prize.
But the audience did. So that's a good. Yeah. That's a very, very good sign, my friend.
Roger Corman.
Yeah. Roger Corman would be very proud of you, sir.
Yeah.
Friend, my friend, thank you so much for being on the show and continue pushing the envelope. And if you're a little bit scared when you're making it, that means it's only going to be good for us. So thank you so much for doing what you do, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Alex.
I want to thank Timur for coming on the show and dropping his knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much, Timur. I'm so excited about Screen Life and really hope that members of the tribe out there go out and try to make feature-length films using this new film language that Timur has created. And if you want to get links to how to make a Screen Life film and you also want to check out his new Screen Life film profile, head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/468. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at indiefilmhustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.